It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And APB, American Protection Bureau, voted number one best on Long Island for all your security needs. Call 631-390-9050. That's 631-390-9050. APB.
You need a body shop? You need engine repair? Auto Excellence, Collision Specialists, 631-261-6420. That's 631-261-6420. Auto Excellence. Jimmy, I gotta take a dump.
What?
No, I mean I need a dumpster.
Well, for all those needs, you need to call Big V Dumpster Rental, Long Island, New York, 631-900-DUMP.
Elm Logistics, for all your logistic needs, call 631-299-3595. That's 631-299-3595. Elm Global Logistics, pride, performance, and partnerships.
The Monty and the Pharaoh Show is brought to you by...
Because wine is your second favorite four-letter word. California wine, New York attitude, good fucking wine.
Yeah.
Tired of that same old breakfast... Lunch and dinner, same old tasting scrambled eggs, burger, that dinner steak, ribs, or pork chops. Why not add a little bit of spice or just a touch of heat to make the difference? Change that scrambled egg with a little bit of Johnny Fabulous's John Cena Sr.'s Million Dollar Jalapeno Hot Sauce. Great on burgers, steaks, chops, and those barbecued ribs.
And Nitro's Garage, for all your automotive needs, call 646-675-2349. That's 646-675-2349. For all your automotive needs, Nitro's Garage, ask for Jack.
Do you treat your dog as part of the family? Well, so do we. So why not celebrate your pup's birthday with the ultimate party box? Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Party Pup Info, and let us make your pup's party or any celebration perfection.
M&J Video Games and Collectibles. Sport and non-sport cards, wrestling items, autographed items. We buy, sell, and trade. M&J Video Games and Collectibles, located at 1049 Queen Street, Southington, Connecticut. Call us at 1-860-479-9223 or 860-93-GAMES. M&J Video Games and Collectibles.
Oh, all right. Welcome, everybody, to Wrestling Remembered. Sorry about the delay. Live performances, always a hiccup. I'm filling in for Bruce this week. He's on assignment. And, folks, we are joined by my co-host, the player. There he is. And, of course, El Presidente, Phil DeCesare. Welcome, guys.
Hey, hey. What a day.
Want to thank everybody that's tuning in though. The chat. The chat's lively and all that stuff. It was a tough thing. I think it was a time zone difference.
Yeah.
I'm in Iowa. I'm an hour behind. So these things, these technicalities and all that stuff, they're kind of tough. But
blame it on the cornfields.
We're under a blizzard. We've had a blizzard for the last 2 days.
God almighty.
We're expecting high winds. And I think negative 24 for tomorrow will be the high. So
wow.
We're going to get some Arctic air.
With a temperature like that, you need to get high.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm telling you, this is crazy weather. I've only been outside to shovel the walkway, and that's it. We haven't gone anywhere. You can't do anything. Whole town is shut down. So
That's penguin weather.
Yep, that's how it is. Let me get my stuff up here. This is the first time I'm doing this show, so there's our little ticker down there and all that good stuff. Well, welcome, everybody. Tonight, Wrestling Remembered, we're shaking things up. We're going to do something a little bit different. I don't know if you saw the previews, but we are going to be discussing and talking about when we first became pro wrestling fans. Everyone's got a story. When was your first time that you actually saw pro wrestling? Was it on TV? How did you get introduced to it? I'm sure it's either through your father, grandfather, aunts, uncles, whatever, mothers. We all have our own unique story. And I'm gonna hit up the player for the first element of this. You could talk to us. Tell us. Player, what is your first recollection of pro wrestling, first time you got introduced to it?
Well, being you said stories so many times, I have to do my my Melvin Udall, Jack Nicholson imitation from Good As It Gets when he says, some people have stories, pretty stories about boats and lakes and noodle salad. But now my story actually started in sometime 1967. Yes, I'm old. I was, for whatever reason, walking into the house, and somehow wrestling was on in the living room, which it never was.
Right.
And
right.
I happened to walk in right at that moment, and Ray Morgan, I don't know if you guys remember him or not. I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Ray
Morgan,
sounds familiar. Yeah.
Was interviewing, of all people, Bruno. And I walked in and I started like this guy looks larger than life. I mean, he looked like a real life Superman to me. You know, I'm 12 years old. And so at the end, Ray Morgan would say, and he would always say this to Bruno, Bruno, how about saying a word for our Italian fans?
Right.
And Bruno would cut an Italian promo.
Yeah.
And my mom, because my mom was in the kitchen 24/7, no matter what, making something.
Right. So,
and she spoke fluent Italian. Ma. And she ran, you know, she came into the living room and she translated what Bruno said. She, you know, be thanks to the fans for his support, and you know, want, you know, hopefully you can make it to the garden, you know, stuff like that. She made a comment to me that, man, he's a classy gentleman, and I thought, okay. And I, you know, at that moment, I kind of really didn't give it a second thought.
Right.
But a couple of months later, it was Christmas, and we only had, I mean, in 1967, there weren't. You know, three or four TV sets in a house.
Sure, sure.
Typically, you know, one, maybe two.
Yeah.
And so for Christmas, and because I was the sports nut in the house, so I wanted to watch the Yankees, the Mets, Knicks, the Rangers, whatever was on Wide World of Sports, bowling on Saturday afternoon, which I absolutely loved, PBA bowling. You name
Earl
it.
Earl Anthony.
Earl Anthony. Nelson Burton, Billy Walu, and Chris Schenkel were the announcers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, so for Christmas 1967, I got a 12 inch Hitachi black and white TV. Now I'm in my glory, 12 year old kid with his own TV. Hey,
right, yeah, that's a big deal.
Put it up in my room. A couple months later, I'm fiddling around and I discovered the UHF, which, you know, really was kind of unknown to me because we never did anything with that, you know, in the family room TV. And I hit upon on Saturday night, channel 47, which was a Spanish station, WNJU, from Newark, New Jersey. And I see this logo, Lucha Libre.
Oh, geez.
And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, it looks like wrestling.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, it's probably going to be in Spanish, but I'll check it out. And so it was actually in English. It was from the National Arena in Washington, D.C. It was Ray Morgan, the announcer, and I decided to watch it. And the reception was really sketchy, though. So it had one of those fashion antennas. So if I put a coat hanger with aluminum foil on top of it and stood 15 feet away, you know, clicked my heels three times, said, you know, there's no place like home, and stood on my head.
Yeah.
I could get manageable reception.
Oh, wow.
But, I mean, I was hooked. And then I remember the date, April 26, 1968. My dad took me to my first show at the Island Garden in West Hempstead, long gone.
Wow.
And the main event was Bruno versus Toru Tanaka. And I just, I don't remember that. There he is.
Toru Tanaka. There he is right there.
And he said that salt when he needed it. But I remember the end of the match, they started bouncing off the ropes. And when they collided, it literally sounded like an earthquake.
Wow.
I mean, the whole arena shook. Yep. And as it turned out, Bruno got up at 9.5. Tanaka was, you know, he could make up. And so Bruno won the match. I mean, how often do you see that now? You never see that, where you might have a count out, but you never have like where the both guys are down and one guy gets up. So, and then about a month later, my best friend who lived next door, it was his birthday, it was May 23rd. And he was going to for any of you Long Islanders, the Huntington Mall.
You're like Rain Man with these dates.
Oh, yeah.
What was the weather like?
Go home with Charlie Babbitt. my mom said, it was 48 and balmy. My mom said I could cut school, which was unheard of.
Sure.
And I could go to the mall with my best friend and, you know, just go shopping. So I had a few bucks on me. We walk into the mall.
Yeah.
And when you got into the mall, there was a bookstore. And I thought, all right. And I was very big into Mad magazines at the time. I think they were either 25 or 30 cents.
Sure. Yeah.
It would say 30 cents cheap on it. And I thought, maybe I'll pick up a Mad magazine. And as I walked into the bookstore, on the left was a magazine rack.
Yeah.
And there was the Wrestling Review, Wrestling World, The Ring Wrestling, and a couple other ones. And within 3 minutes after being in the mall, all my money was gone. But let me tell you that day changed my life forever, because I was a fan when I went to the match the first time, but now I was a fan for life after seeing those magazines.
But you had a unique experience of being in the magazine, right?
Well, I mean, about a year later, it's such a different world back then that the Apter mags, and this is actually before Bill Apter, though.
I think
started working for them in 1970.
Yeah.
The November 1969 issue of the Wrestler magazine, they had both Inside Wrestling and The Wrestler both had pen pal sections. So you sent your school picture.
Right.
And you mentioned who your favorite wrestler was. You actually put your address on there. You talk about a trusting world back then, right?
Let me see if I can get that up here. Hold on. Oh, there you are. Oh, wow.
No, I can tell everybody.
1969. Look at that mug, huh?
Island profiling.
Wow.
Handsome guy.
Yeah.
Interville Ave, huh? Wow.
That was 1969. Up until 3 years ago, if you sent me a letter to that address, my sister would have got it for me. The house was in the family for, I think, 62 years.
I think you were a player there. What's that girl section there? You like the girls 12 to 14?
Well, I can thankfully say that I have upgraded, and now I'm like into girls in their 20s because I don't want Chris Hansen coming to my house and saying, why don't you have a seat?
I love it. I love it. Look at you. You're like Spyros Arian. That was a great – he was a great
well,
wrestler.
You know what, though? Here's the thing. Yeah. I put – Bruno was my favorite wrestler.
Okay.
They did some editorial license there. Mm. I guess – I mean, everybody loved Bruno. So I guess they were tired of, you know, everybody loving Bruno. So they put Spyros – I didn't put Spyros Arian. I mean, I liked Spyros Arian, but Bruno was my choice.
Katie Morgan's chiming in, Benny. She says she never forgets anything. That's why she loves you. Wow.
She's a keeper. She's a good person.
And Joe Myers is chiming in saying all the hot babes lived on Intervale.
All the young dudes and all the hot babes. Yep.
Chat's jumping. Okay, tonight.
I mean, that day at the mall was life changing. When I got home, I looked at those magazines, and you know what my first observation was, because in my mind I thought the entire wrestling universe was what I saw on TV on Saturday night.
Right.
And I'm seeing these, like, the Infernos with J.C. Dykes. Wow. And I'm seeing Vern Gagne. And I'm seeing, you know, all Jack Briscoe and all these other Harley Race. I mean, who are these guys?
Yeah.
You know, I saw the ratings. The ratings then were the top 50. And I recognized Bruno and, like, Victor Rivera.
But you also said you like this guy right here, Baron Miguel Cicluna. He was a tall guy. Look at him. He's strapping. Look at that. He's with the tag team title. Who's his tag team champion? Who's he with?
King Curtis.
Oh, yep. King Curtis. That's right.
Curtis Iaquea. Okay.
Yeah. I also put up earlier Fuji and Tanaka up there. Those guys were, they scared me. Even when I became a fan, Fuji always scared me too because he was pretty vicious. But great story, buddy. That was good. That's awesome.
That was it for me. I mean, after seeing those magazines and going to the show and, I mean, you know, the funny thing is I posted on Facebook today that in 1969, you know, I would shoot the breeze with my friends, you know, talking about wrestling. And here I am 54 years later. Wow. What am I doing? I'm shooting the breeze with my talking with my friends about wrestling. So I guess I plateaued at the age of 14.
And I was born in August. I was born in August of 69. So there you go. I'm 54.
Older than I am. But yeah, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. But I mean,
that's awesome.
I can't imagine what my life would have been like without professional wrestling all these years.
I know. I'm telling you, that's some of the stories. Whenever I ask this question, even with wrestlers or whoever I interviewed before, how did you become into wrestling? Everything is so similar. It's been a family member or something, or, you know, they heard it somewhere and, you know, and they were hooked. Anybody who turned it on was automatically hooked and they sucked you in and all that stuff. But the president of Thursday Night, he's joining us tonight. This is great. This is a great treat having the El Presidente on here, the former Death 30 champion. Phil, what's your story? What year did you become a fan, and how did you become a fan?
Oh, great, great questions. Well, since it's Friday, I think I'm demoted to Secretary of State here, but I'll hold high office nonetheless. Well, you know, it started, I think, a lot of us, I think, started with superheroes to some extent, at least having an affinity for some comic books or TV. And
Shazam.
For me, Shazam was big. You remember Billy Batson?
Oh, yeah, I remember him, yep.
Well, here's a quick quiz question. Do you know what Shazam stands for? It's an acronym.
Is it really? Superhero,
Benny?
Amazing?
No, you got me. I'm stumped.
I wonder if anyone in the chat knows. I dare them. I'll suspend the answer for a few moments. But
yeah, let's let the chat answer.
We'll let the chat try to guess that one. Maybe J.A. will get it. I don't know.
So you're telling me Shazam was an actual
J.A. acronym? Or Luke Cannon's going to get this.
I know they're going to. I know they're going to.
Katie's too young. I think Katie Morgan. 11. She knocked on my door to sell me Girl Scout cookies last week.
You know, we're all born in the 60s and 70s here.
I never knew that Shazam was an acronym.
And that's what Billy Batson would say. But in Superman, huge. The old George Reeves Superman.
J. Will's got the answer.
Of course he does.
Hercules, Atlas, Zeus,
Achilles, and Mercury.
Mercury, yeah. Wow. Good job, J. Will.
Nicely done.
Nicely done.
Yeah. So it started with that. The Superman just got hooked, you know, the strength, man, the larger than life abilities, you know, and of course, Captain Marvel, Shazam, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then the Hulk came along real form.
The Bill Baxter version?
The Lou Ferrigno and Bill Bixby version. Bixby. Absolutely. Yep.
Oh my God.
And as a second grader, I wrote a letter to Lou Ferrigno and he sent me an autographed picture in return. Wow. So I was
How old were you then?
8 years old.
Jesus. That you must have been in heaven.
Yeah. So naturally the quest was let's look for more superheroes, you know, on TV. Yeah. So, we were talking before we went on, Joe, and I won't steal your thunder too much.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
But since we're from the same area and because we both had paper routes, which is interesting too.
Yeah.
And it was right around that time in 81 or so when I really started watching. I do have memories as a kid with some older cousins watching back even in the late 70s, vague memories. But for me, it really was 1981, the year.
Wow.
And I think the person who drew me in first was likely seeing Andre the Giant, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I was familiar with his name because I was a big mark for the $6 million man back in the day. And, of course, Andre was in probably the most popular episode. There he is.
Yeah.
There he is right now. Yeah.
I remember the crowds when he came out. It was like that hush. That, oh my God, that big attraction coming down the aisle. He scared me. He legitimately scared me.
I had the distinct pleasure in, I don't want to say I met him as much as I stalked him at the Worcester Auditorium back in the day, crawling under fans to get over to him to shake his hand as he was returning from the ring. So I get to actually, you know, be in his presence in his prime, and which for me was just a memory that just sticks. And we're talking 40 years ago, over 40 years ago, you know. Yep. But he was one of the main drivers, I think, that drew my eyes to the screen. And I know you especially mentioned Martel and Gurria.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Who for their time really were a great tag team, okay? Yep. They were not these big, fat, old guys that we used to see on TV. Yeah. You know, they were athletic. They were streamlined.
Yep.
One had the blue and the red, the red trunks with the blue stripes, and the other the blue with the red and all that. And their finisher was the sunset flip, I believe, off the top rope. And to me at that time, that was like someone flying. It was incredible. Oh, yeah. And, you know, and to see Mil Máscaras on there doing his thing. And
if you remember, the ropes were very loose back then.
Absolutely.
Right? Like when you got on that top rope, you needed balance. You needed to really secure yourself. And obviously in wrestling boots, that's tough. So to see something like that.
It's pretty impressive.
The whole ring would shake and the ropes would go crazy. And the crowd would go crazy too. So that was awesome.
Let me tell you, Joe, the ropes were so loose that sometimes you didn't have to go up top to have an issue. I remember Killer Khan had a match once, and I think he was just leaning against the rope or backing up on his opponent, and he fell through the ropes onto the floor. There he is right there. Yeah.
Killer Khan.
Another guy who scared me as a kid.
Yeah.
He was legit scary.
Oh, he absolutely was.
That's a famous magazine cover photo right there. And I bought that magazine in 2 seconds when I saw that. I was like, who is this guy on the cover, torturing Bob Backlund?
Amazing. Yeah. And making Backlund just work in that vulnerable angle right there, which, I could always sense that he had capabilities. And we all know now if push came to shove, that Backlund would be the guy, in any situation.
Yeah.
But he was still able to kind of give that vulnerability. You would worry when he would defend his title. You would really be concerned. And he just had such a great cast of foils, of heels to choose from. And, these guys were superheroes in many ways, real life superheroes, and the things they did in the ring were things that I could never imagine myself doing, and it was good and evil, it was that premise.
It's
that basic conflict. Okay.
Very simple.
Yeah. So
I remember Killer Karn every time he entered the arena. That excitement, that hush, that booing and all that stuff. It was like he came out, he meant business. And, you know, he went after, you know, I think he one of the matches I saw him wrestle might have been Backlund or whatever. But, you know, he was one of the first guys to go after you before the bell rung.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was like, whoa, wait, the bell didn't ring yet. What are you doing?
You know? He had no respect for the rules, you know.
And Gilberto Roman always was his referee.
Little Gilberto.
Gilberto Roman.
That the first 2 minutes of championship wrestling, I put that in the chat earlier. The first 2 minutes of championship wrestling with the doctor in attendance, Dr. George Saharian, timekeeper at the bell, Charlie Daniels,
or Mike Mittman at the bell sometimes.
Yes.
You know,
but I tell you what, like when Joe McHugh was doing that, all was well in my world. I mean, I'm telling you that if there was a nuclear explosion outside, I would have waited till a commercial to go outside and check it out.
Yeah. I'd always joke that if I was in a coma, just play him and I'd probably wake up.
Yeah,
oh, just my Lord.
And then it was Joe McHugh Luke. Absolutely.
That 2.5 minutes of championship wrestling right there was just, you knew it was like, oh, this is it. This is going to be a big hour. Something big's going to happen. And, I used to practice announcing that. And I'd be like, your referees for this hour, you had Gilberto Roman, Dick Kroll.
Dick Worley.
God, he was a legend. Dick Worley. Yeah. And sometimes he never wore the striped referee shirt. He wore like a gray shirt.
Yeah, he wore like a polo shirt or something. Yeah.
Who was that? Gino Morella's. What was his name?
Joey Morella.
Joey Morella came along later. Yeah. I mean, these are the names that you were
and
like.
You had Mario Savoldi.
Savoldi, yes, indeed. Yeah.
So, and it's funny. They were the TV referees, and you didn't get them sometimes at the Garden, at the Boston Garden. You got other referees that you never saw before, which was kind of weird. On occasion, you did get one of those guys, but I don't recall ever seeing Dick Worley live.
No, I've never seen him either. And, I think they were appointed by the Pennsylvania State Commission.
State Athletic Commission.
Yeah.
Yes, folks, because believe it or not, back then wrestling was regulated. You needed a license to wrestle professionally.
You had to pass a physical exam before you got in the ring.
You had to do that. I mean, it's just amazing how it's transformed from that time to now, with the state athletic commissions and all that stuff. And, even the wrestling programs set it on the bottom. These matches are sanctioned. I go, these are real matches. That's what drew you in. It was like a legitimate thing back then. This wrestling and all that stuff. So,
Well, when you're announcing the doctor in attendance and the state athletic commission, I mean, that gives such an air of legitimacy.
Oh yeah. It was very much like boxing in that sense.
They made it solid, they made it what it was and all that stuff.
And those turnbuckles, for a spell they had Everlast turnbuckles, which really I thought gave it that final little something that made it a little more legitimate too.
Yeah, Joe Will's got a good one, a teen memory. Him and his dad, brother, had aisle seats. Paul Orndorff was feuding with Buzz Sawyer. Paul walked by and Pops tapped him on the shoulder and said he was hard as a rock.
Yeah.
He had big arms. Speaking of Buzz Sawyer, I think I got something here for these guys.
I don't think Paul Orndorff missed too many dates at the gym.
No, probably not. Probably not. Here we go. Here's some guys, huh?
Buzz
Sawyer, bottom of right, last battle of Atlanta.
Sure.
A good one. The Von Erichs, obviously, with the Iron Claw movie coming out. I haven't seen it yet, but that's on my bucket list.
I saw it. Yeah.
Yep. And Bob Backlund right there. What a photo. I love that photo of Backlund back in the day.
Such great shape. And
yeah, he was.
And another thing too, the superhero element aside, I think what these performers, these athletes, these entertainers do is, I mean, they inspire us. I don't know. I know Benny probably, he's been working out for his whole life. And I mean, I drew inspiration from Bob Backlund.
I shoveled snow in the blizzard today. I was working out.
So. Yeah, absolutely, dude. Be careful too. Please. My goodness. Shoveling is no joke there, Joe. You know that.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, you got to take it easy shoveling snow. And this is
I was a Bruno guy and not so much a Pedro guy, but I bought into Bob Backlund 100%.
Me too.
I thought he was a great champion.
He looked
like one. He was very humble and soft spoken until he got pissed off. Yep, and then, you know, when he flipped the switch, he could go ballistic. Yep. But I mean, just talk about like the way he could handle himself in the ring. Right. Unbelievable.
He had counters for everything, and he was always studying film and looking for counters. And you know, they would actually talk. He'd talk about that in his interviews, which I know a lot of people critique him for, you know, not being so, you know, so charismatic or what have you, but he took it seriously. He took it like it was a contest.
He was the golden boy. Yep. He was
absolutely
from Princeton. But even
like, you know, like back in the NWA, like a Dory Funk Jr., a Briscoe, they were kind of cut out of the same cloth. They weren't like really good talkers. They were great wrestlers.
It was like strictly business. Ring, I'm going to do my thing and I'll see you later. And, you know, that if that's their character, they pulled it off well, you know, because, you know, they like that outside the ring. I don't know. Maybe you guys know, but, you know, my memories go back, Phil 81.
Yeah.
I'll tell you my story. I know I filled you guys in, but
no, tell the world.
I was about 11 or 12 years old, summer of 81, June, school just got out. My buddy two doors down from me had a paper route and he was going away for the summer and he asked me to do his paper route for him. So, I said, okay. So a couple of weeks later, June of 81, I am doing a paper route. And as we all know, you have to collect money on Fridays and Saturdays and so forth. And I did that. And of course, there were a couple of leftovers. So I had to go on Saturday to pick up some money. So amazingly, six doors down from me, a lady, an older lady, old lady at that time, I knocked on her door and, you know, she said she'd be right there. And it was a screen door. It was warm enough. The door was open. And I heard this ruckus on the television. I'm talking, she was older, so the TV was cranked up pretty good. I mean, the whole area could hear that. And there was screaming and yelling, and people were screaming. And when she handed me the money, I asked her, I go, what is that on TV? And she goes, that's Saturday Morning Wrestling on Channel 56. And I took that $2, I ran home, and I turned it on, and lo and behold, it was Tony Garea and Rick Martel and the Moondogs and the Chaos and Vince McMahon screaming, Pat Patterson screaming. You talk about an injection in your vein and how quick I became a fan. I was hooked right then and there.
Immediately.
Yeah. Imagine. I mean, I don't know what the attraction was. Was it the ring ropes? One thing I did get attracted to, and guys back then would laugh at me, but were the wrestling belts. I loved the you know, back then they were humbled with the belts. They would throw them around. They were nothing. But I saw them as like gold. I was like, these things are impressive. And when you saw them in person and the lights were shining on them, you know, I do have a collection of them and so forth. I'm glad to share. I got the Backlund belt.
I love the old Backlund belt and the tag belt.
I got Hogan's 85 belt behind me right there. Yeah. I got the What a Day belt right behind me as well.
The best one.
A signed Bruno Rowe behind me. But, you know, and I told you guys before, if the audience can see behind me, I got my first three wrestling programs from the Boston Garden back in July, August, and September of 1981. And I got to tell you, and of course, the November issue too as well, the Andre Khan stretcher match.
Yes.
There was just something back then when I was hooked. And when I say I was hooked, I was in front of that TV Saturday morning at 11 a.m. And shortly thereafter, cable TV came rolling down the street.
Oh, yeah.
It was over. World Class Championship Wrestling.
Channel 25, Joe. Remember? Channel
25, Championship Wrestling. Remember All Star Wrestling out of Worcester was on early. Channel 27, I do believe, or something like that.
Channel 27 it was on. Yep. And then
Gary Michael Capetta was the announcer, the ring announcer for that one.
And then it went to Channel 9 on Sunday.
Around, but I found it. I found it. And then TBS. You know, Turner Broadcasting was it streaming in 6:05 to 8:05 every Saturday night. Georgia Championship Wrestling, which turned into World Championship Wrestling. I learned more about wrestling on those Saturdays, whether it was WWF or NWA or World Class. You talk about three different products. I was hooked.
Let me ask you guys something here real quick, because I mean, I had the same phenomenon. I mean, it started with obviously with WWF.
Right.
And then in the mid 70s, there was another station, Channel 41 out of Paterson, New Jersey, that showed NWA Hollywood. So it was wrestling from the Olympic.
Never saw that. Yeah.
And then like a couple of years later, then I got championship wrestling from Florida with Gordon Solie, Georgia Championship Wrestling. Eventually we got the World Class Southwest.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is it's, and I mean, the more the merrier, like bring them. But now it seems like you have to choose one or the other. You can't be a fan of both WWE or AEW. It seems like you have to be in a camp. Given my upbringing, I don't get that.
Well, it's become tribal, man. You know, like politics, it's become tribal in many ways. And it shouldn't be either or, right?
Yeah,
but it shouldn't be, and it shouldn't have to be.
Why can't you like both? I mean,
you can like everything. Who cares? It's a free country.
I do. I'm unashamedly going to say I like it. I like it all. You know, and of course,
I watch it to see. I mean, those guys are entertainers. They're performing in front of a live audience. I mean, you know, not everybody can do that. Not everybody's fit to do that and to do what they do, whether it's AEW, WWE, and TNA, whatever. You know, NWA now on it's coming. They got a TV deal coming or whatever, but it's. You know, going back to those times when World Class was on and Georgia Amazing. Championship Wrestling was on and Southwest Championship Wrestling, I love that.
Yeah.
Adrian Adonis. Adrian Adonis beat Tully Blanchard, right? I mean, I remember that. I mean, you talk about filing that stuff back and boom, it comes to you. But you didn't see them in person. You know, WWF, first Saturday of every month, you saw them at the Boston Garden.
Yeah.
But you didn't see the guys from Southwest. You didn't see Georgia Championship Wrestling. The only thing that I caught on to with Georgia Championship Wrestling or World Championship Wrestling was I do believe that Vince and the Crockett's, they had some type of thing going because I've mentioned this before in the 30 and all that. The Samoans would be down on Georgia Championship Wrestling. Rocky King was their manager or something like that. I forget.
Sonny King. Yeah.
And they're down there. And then the next week they're on WWF Championship Wrestling. So I started thinking, okay, I mean, I had to figure it out. Of course, the wrestling magazines always helped me out. Second Tuesday of every month, I was at the newsstand picking it up, The Wrestler, Inside Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, Sports Review.
Yeah.
And then wrestling's main event came out. George Napolitano left and started his own magazine. I had a thing. I went to a friend's house, and I walked in his room, and his room was plastered with posters. Like, he used it as wallpaper.
Yeah.
It didn't matter if the TV was in front of it or whatever. He used it. So I got that idea, and I did that to my room.
Me too.
You talk about being consumed by pro wrestling. I would wake up, and the Von Erichs would be over here, Tommy Rich over here, a bloody Captain Lou Albano over here, Snooker over here. You name it. You're waking up to it.
Yeah.
And people like look at me like, you're crazy. And I go, no, I'm just a fan. I love this stuff. You know, I fake wrestled in middle school and I challenged an art teacher and we had this big to do. And when he came out, I walked away. I did the old, nah, I'm not doing this now. And, you know, that's how hooked I was. It's amazing how, you know, we all have the same similar stories. Benny, you were hooked right away. You're a pen pal in the magazine now. You're in the magazine. Geez. I mean, I would have loved to have been in the magazine, my picture.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing how this works. And it's just, and John Gallagher, the aftermags were gold standard. Yeah. That was the internet back then.
Yeah.
Right. That was the internet. Well, I would say,
what did you guys like? I remember, I mean, it's 50 years ago, but I remember exactly how I felt. There was a luncheonette that I went to on the way home from junior high school.
Sure.
It was a very heavy set woman named Joyce. And her husband named Nat, who had three fingers, so he was three-fingered Nat. And but I'll never forget the feeling that I felt when I looked at that magazine rack and I saw a new wrestling magazine. It just, I mean, I was in heaven.
It was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm just replying to some people. I always thought it was funny when, you know, you went back too early to the magazine rack and you saw the one you already bought, and it's like, damn, it's not out yet.
Yeah.
God, there's still,
you know, but most guys my age, you know, 14-year-old kid, the Playboys were like all the way at the top. So you had to climb on the shelf.
In plastic.
Yeah, in plastic. And, you know, of course, like Nat.
Did you ever put one inside of a regular magazine? And before they caught on, you know?
Yeah. I don't remember.
Nat had radar.
I was older when Playboy and Hustle were in those sleeves. I always saw them. They were just out in the open. You could just pick them up.
They caught on to us.
The funny thing is, though, like, I didn't really care about the Playboys.
I didn't either.
Yeah, I was like, forget about that, you know?
So, you know, back in the day, you know, you had cash. And again, we talk about using your discretionary income. And from my paper route, I would buy the magazines. I wouldn't always. No ATM cards back in the day, you know?
All cash.
It was all cash. So if I didn't have enough cash and there were all these magazines I wanted and I could only get a few. And we, there were shelves and arrays of magazines. I would hide the other magazines in other spots, come back the next day and buy them because they seemed to disappear pretty quickly.
All right, I'm going to tell my magnificent Morocco story to the fans. Okay, guys, you guys ready for this?
Yeah.
Everybody in the chat, this is a true story. December of 81, I'll pull up the image in a second. December of 1981, the Boston Garden hosted a wrestling event. It was Saturday afternoon. Because for some reason, Phil, they had them on Saturday afternoon only in December.
Yeah.
Always a 1 o'clock show. And I remember distinctly because I had to go to a birthday party that night, but I remember it was snowing out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I wasn't expecting a huge crowd there. But lo and behold, 15,000 strong on a Saturday afternoon, back in Morocco, cage match. This was a big deal. Cage matches are huge. I do believe this was my first. Yeah, this is my very first cage match that I witnessed in person. December 5th, 1981. So the match goes on. Morocco gets tied up in the ropes with his neck. Backlund escapes. Crowd goes wild. Well, I'm two sections over from where the wrestlers have to leave and go down the runway. And I was a scrawny little kid back then, and I booked it over there. And as Morocco was coming down the aisle to go into the, you know, the locker room area, I took my hand and I swiped his forehead. And I got blood on my hand, Don Morocco's blood, Magnificent Morocco's blood on my hand. He looked at me with such a look, and all the security guards, I hightailed it back to, you know, two sections over.
Oh, yeah.
So I had Morocco's blood on my hand. So I went home. I didn't take a shower. I didn't do anything. I waited till Monday to go to school to show everybody that I had Don Morocco's blood on my hands. This is a true story, folks.
Real blood at that.
Real blood at that. It was crusty and all cruddy by the time Monday came around. But, you know, people thought I was nuts, but I tell that story. So I tell the story on Facebook. I want to say 2016, 2017. I tell the story. I just got into podcasting. And then somebody sends me this image off to the right. The left side, the left side is the program from that night. But on the right side is the actual photo of Don Morocco, Magnificent Morocco, leaving the steel cage. Phil, you can tell it's like the bluish cage the Garden had back then.
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah.
It's the bluish cage. And he was leaving. And that was literally seconds before I swiped my hand on his forehead.
Amazing.
The power of the internet, the power of Facebook and all that stuff. Random fan sends me that.
That's so cool.
I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. But yeah, people thought I was at seventh grade, I think I was in, and people thought I was out of my mind. And that's the kind of fan I was. It was all wrestling. Everything was wrestling 24/7. I couldn't wait for Saturday mornings. I couldn't wait to go to wrestling at the Garden every month. I think they went to the Cape Cod Coliseum on, you know, in the summertime. They would go down there.
Yeah.
The Cape Cod Melody Tent.
Yeah.
Go there. I'd go to those matches, you know. I mean, they weren't main event matches. I think the Mastin Vaders were like the main events back then. They put the B squad down there.
Yeah.
Then I have another picture here of Morocco leaving after retaining against Tito Santana. This is him coming down. He just left. As you can see, the stairs behind him. But, you know, obviously a few years before, that's kind of where I swiped my hand on him before he went down there. And that he goes to the left. He goes right into the locker room there. But he was a bloody mess that night, too. I don't want to say this is like 83, 84 when he was brawling with Tito Santana. But that's the kind of fan I was. I was into it.
On the topic of blood, Joe.
Yeah.
Not to the extreme you did, but I saw Snuka and Quick Draw Rick McGraw at the Worcester Memorial Auditorium.
Sure.
I got Quick Draw's autograph when he was on his way to the ring.
Yep.
After the match, Snuka won, of course, bloodied McGraw, and McGraw staggered back to the dressing room.
Right.
He was bleeding a lot. I took that piece of paper, folded it up, and dipped it into the puddle of blood and had that for a long time, too. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing.
1982.
I had friends who were into wrestling, so sometimes I was able to stand in the area where the wrestlers came out of the locker rooms and stuff like that. You know, the forbidden door, so to speak, you weren't supposed to go behind. But
it was magical, man. Yeah, it was magical.
So Tonga Kid was fighting. I think it was Snuka and Tonga Kid, Piper versus Orton at the Garden. And I didn't know. Tonga Kid was like 17 years old at the time, 18 years. He was a young pup. And Gorilla Monsoon was there. And of course, they wanted blood, and the Tonga kid sliced his head up so bad.
Oh,
I mean, he there was blood, the blood on the floor, blood.
Wasn't everywhere. Good at blading.
It was a 17-year-old kid got carried away. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
and they had to bandage him up. And so we're going out to dinner, and he's walking around Boston with a bandage around his head and still in his the Fiji ring attire. And he was out of his mind. I'm like, this guy's playing. He's going all out. I'm like, Jesus. And people were following him. And, you know, it was incredible.
Living the gimmick. So absolutely. Living the gimmick.
And you said you were into fitness, right, Tony Atlas? Phil?
Oh, absolutely. What an inspiration, man.
Yeah, there he is right there.
You know, and people – when we talk about the classic physiques in wrestling, we talk Luger, Kerry Von Erich and all, but
sure.
You know, for my money, I mean, and they're both very notable, and there are so many others who but he, it was just in a class by himself in so many ways. And, you know, he still looks really good today too.
Yeah.
He's a genetic freak.
He's got me in a headlock up there in the upper left corner.
That's incredible. Yeah. Look at those arms, Joe. Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, my arms are his.
Both of your arms. My God.
Joe, did you have the Asiatic spike on that day or no?
I didn't have the Asiatic. You know, I went to take a picture with him. I said, I'm in a wrestling ring. Give me your belt. I want to. And by the way, that belt I'm holding is the actual WCW World Heavyweight Championship that was originally held by Ron Simmons.
Wow.
I don't know why Tony Atlas says he holds it on. He's holding it for him or with him, but that's the actual belt. 10 pounds of gold there. It was, so I said, give me the belt. Let's take a picture. And he happily obliged. And that picture was awesome to take. He was so generous in taking that. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. Tony Atlas, great guy. He's very friendly.
Absolutely.
Good guy to talk to. What's he live up in Maine, I think, somewhere?
Yeah, he's up there in Maine.
Yep.
Great guy. Auburn, I believe.
Yeah, he is in Auburn. You're exactly right. He is. Yeah. He's a trainer up there, too. He's a fitness trainer. And that makes total sense.
Yeah, Joe, I think we all had something in common, though. I think, Joe, you mentioned that. I bet, Phil, you did the same thing. You guys went to the Boston Garden maybe every month.
Yeah, once a month. Yep.
And I know that, let me see, John Gallagher said that in the chat room that I guess the in Toronto.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find it.
Sunday nights at 7 p.m.
Yeah. And I would go to the, because the Garden was a hike, but I could drive 20 minutes to the Nassau Coliseum every month.
Yeah.
And I would go every month. I couldn't wait.
That's our Coliseum right there.
There you go.
Yeah.
And what this argument that Vince McMahon made wrestling bigger and better, he made it bigger.
Yeah.
But to us, I mean, I always thought that like I was a part of this because I went every single month. And, you know, I thought maybe these guys recognized me because I sat in the same place every month.
Sure.
And we can't do that anymore. I mean, I live about a half an hour from Emily Arena in Tampa. I think they're there maybe once a year.
Right. So now, did you get personal? Benny,
it's lost the intimacy.
Yeah. Benny, did you go to Madison Square Garden matches at all?
I have. This is a story in itself.
Never? You never gone?
The only thing I went to Madison Square Garden twice in my whole life. Once was in 1970. It was on Palm Sunday to watch roller derby.
Palm Sunday.
It was the San Francisco Bay Bombers versus the Midwest Pioneers.
On Palm Sunday.
I had such a traumatic experience. It would take a whole show just to tell you about that.
Oh, Jesus.
That I stayed away from the Garden for 4.5 years. The next time I went back to the Garden was on Thanksgiving Day, 1974, to an Elton John concert.
Oh, geez.
Which will always be the best concert of my life because Murray Kaufman, who is Murray the K, famous DJ out of New York, said, we have a surprise guest. And we're thinking, who the heck could it be? It was John Lennon.
Wow. And
I never heard an arena before or after erupt. I thought the Garden was going to explode. And they sang whatever gets you through the night.
Incredible.
It was
unbelievable.
It was like history
of the making. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
but no, I never. All my wrestling was at the Coliseum.
Loose Cannon says only Benny would go to Madison Square Garden for roller derby, 1970.
You know what? At the time, though, it set the indoor attendance record for roller derby.
I loved when they showed matches. Like if there was a title change, going to Madison Square Garden now. You know, Miracle Morales wars and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I loved on TV. I think Phil, if you remember, USA Network used to show the Madison Square Garden matches a month later.
And we used to stay up late to watch them. They would show MSG. They would show the Cap Center sometimes.
Yep, I remember that.
And occasionally you get some Spectrum. Look at that. I love Pedro, too. Yeah, Pedro Morocco had some great wars.
And the blue ropes tells you that it's Madison Square Garden.
And it tells you it was, you know, roughly 1982 because,
That was my favorite wars. I loved it. And any magazine that covered it, I picked it up. Morocco Morales, they could have ran that for like 2 or 3 years. I really honestly believe they could have taken that feud and they could have had, you know, they were lightning in a bottle with those two.
They were believable. Okay. They were very believable.
Because he's always ready for any kind of action.
Baby.
But you guys are a little bit younger than I am. I have to tell you, though, that roller derby for a couple of years in the late 60s and the early 70s was absolutely huge.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, roller derby. I mean, it was on TV. I saw it on TV.
My gramps loved it. I remember.
Yeah. I mean, I guess around 72, it kind of like petered off. But like when I saw it at the Garden, I mean, they were packed.
See, I thought for sure you would have went to Madison Square Garden to see Bruno and George the Animal in a steel cage match. That's an old one. Look at that's the old Garden there with those everlasting.
I don't know if anybody in the chat room is my age, but when I first saw George Steele in 1968.
Yeah.
And Ray Morgan interviewed him and he was very eloquent.
Yeah.
Very, very well spoken.
Right.
And you know, the next summer, I guess when he came back, then he was in Neanderthal.
Yes.
Yeah, Myers was his last name.
Jim Myers.
Jim Myers. I will never forget that he had stomach issues. He had colitis issues.
Yeah.
And he started a website about a new drink or a new formula for that. And I messaged him and all that. This is when cell phones were brand spanking new. Phone, you know, I don't think you could even text then. And I reached out to him and he called me back. He called me back and I'm like, am I really talking to George C. Animal's Steel? He's like, you're talking to Jim Myers, you know? And that school teacher came out in him, you know, because he was a school teacher, whatever.
Yeah.
And
by all accounts, a very nice man.
Yeah. Very nice guy and all that stuff. I mean, this is a guy who played a role for years and you would never think that's why a lot of his time was spent during the summer. He was busy during the summer. Excuse me.
Yeah.
You know, you always saw him from like May to October, he would do his runs with Backlund or whatever and all that stuff until he retired from school. I think it was Michigan, right, where he was out of?
He was a football coach and a teacher in Michigan. Now, when he was in Michigan, before he came to the WWF, he wrestled as a student under a mask so that because he didn't want his students to recognize
him. Oh, wow, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, and he said he made his real money, though, after Vince Jr. took over. And he became like the comical, you know, baby face, George Steele. And that's where he made his real money.
Yeah, Ja Will, of course, the Omni was the Madison Square Garden of Georgia Championship Wrestling. I mean, when I watched Georgia Championship Wrestling every Saturday, it looked like they were wrestling every Saturday night there. Like that night. Does anybody remember that when they used to show in between the wrestling matches? Oh, Tommy Wildfire Rich taking on Buzz Sawyer at the Omni this Saturday. Or it was that night.
I don't think the Omni was weekly.
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, the Omni is,
could have been every 3 weeks or so, too. They were very popular, you know?
AWA, I think, in the St. Paul Civic Center, they were a couple of times a month. Florida, the Homer Hester Lee was every Tuesday night.
The Armory, yeah.
Yeah, the Armory. And then a Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis was every Monday night. Can you imagine that, being a fan of wrestling? You can go to wrestling every single week.
Speaking of when we talk about world-class championship wrestling, this guy used to scare me. Wild Bill Irwin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
With that stupid bull rope. And it was funny. He would never actually make contact with anything, but he hit the ropes and all. You believed what he was a maniac in the ring.
He was a big guy and he was a huge guy. He looked tough.
Yep. He was a huge guy. We got John Gallagher saying the face turn on the first Saturday night's main event. That's right. With Captain Lou was really good.
Yes.
Yeah. Saturday night's main event. That was mid 80s, 86 or whatever. I think that was on the tails of WrestleMania. They capitalized on that and they had the NBC deal there. I think Saturday Night Live went on a hiatus or something like that.
Yeah.
But, and they filled it in with that. That was a show. You know, because as a teenager, obviously I'm out on Saturday nights having fun. I'd come home and watch that. You know, curfew, 11 o'clock at night, come on home and, you know, grab whatever and watch Saturday night's main event. What a great way to end Saturdays.
And they'd have what, 15 million people watching it, maybe?
What's that?
They'd have like 15 million people. Now, I mean, what WWE has about 2.5 million. AEW can't even crack a million.
Yeah, that's all DVR stuff now. That's Vince McMahon's pet peeve, by the way. He begs Nielsen and all those guys to count the DVR recordings as people who watch, because you people do DVR it now and they watch it later.
Yeah, when we grew up, it was appointment TV. You had to be on your couch at 6:05 for Georgia wrestling. You had to be on your couch at 11 a.m. from Channel 56 for WWF. You weren't gonna miss
that. Yeah, that's why they had to put out a TV guide to tell you when everything was going. That was television programming. They were programming us to sit in front of that TV.
And we all remembered. Yeah, we were very obedient.
Yeah.
How great was it on a Saturday morning when they'd have a tag team title change? And that happened so many times.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It always seemed to be tag team titles always changed on TV.
Yep.
Very
tag teams we talked about that last night, I think. They were so meaningful back then, the tag teams. They don't really mean much of anything now.
Yeah.
Foxhole Willie said Steele used to have dinner at a house down the street from my house when he was here in Boston. Okay, cool. That's all right. And then Joe Will's got the Mass Superstar and the Super Destroyer, Scott Irwin, in 82 were a good team. Saw them in person.
Yeah.
So, Super Destroyer was Scott Irwin?
Yes, the original. No, yep. And Wild Bill, his brother, they wrestled in World Class as the team. But yeah, Scott Irwin. He was also one of the Yukon Lumberjacks.
Wow. Joe Myers says, Joe, on Saturday nights, you were out kissing the girls and making them cry. But I was home by 11:30 to watch Saturday night's main event. So
priorities.
Priorities, you know, you had to do that. Oh, my God. Some of these comments are great. Keep the comments coming, folks. Joe Will again, Captain Wild Bill Irwin versus Tommy Rich was a good feud. That was a good feud.
They built these feuds up, though. They took the time to properly build these feuds.
Yeah.
And they had you hooked.
Yeah. And John Gallagher chiming in. Wyndham and Rotunda beat the Sheik and Volkoff on TV. That's right. Was that Saturday night's main event?
Might have been.
Won the title on there? I think that
they probably did on one of the. Yeah.
You know, things got kind of weird television wise. I want to say post WrestleMania when they had these. When they started, they left the field houses and all that stuff and started going to actual arenas or other armories.
Yeah.
I remember King Kong Moscow was a commentator with somebody. They had like, it was almost like watching NBC Sports. Everyone had a pairing and, you know, that arena had those guys. And every time you turned on, it wasn't the Saturday morning wrestling anymore like we used to watch. It was, you know, they would show matches from different areas of the country.
Yeah.
And then I think Sunday morning they came along. What was that? All-American Wrestling with Hogan and all that stuff. I mean, things changed after WrestleMania.
Yeah, these compilation programs replaced studio wrestling, which is even Allentown could be considered studio wrestling, although they had, you know, typically more fans in the arena than a Georgia Wrestling or some of those other or even World Class, you know. But
I got a funny story. Speaking of WrestleMania, you guys will like this. WrestleMania, Phil, you remember closed circuit TV, Boston Garden, all that stuff was held.
Held
on a Sunday.
Big screens.
And for some reason, nobody wanted to go see WrestleMania in my house, but I wanted to. So I had to connive everybody and say, well, I'm going to go play some street hockey with my friends. And, you know, I had $20 in my pocket. That was enough for the ticket. So what I did was I took my hockey stick. I walked down the street. I dropped my hockey stick off to the side. I hop on the red line.
There you go.
All the way to Boston Garden. I go to Boston Garden. I'm watching WrestleMania. I got a good floor seat. I'm looking at a closed circuit television screen.
Yeah.
Watching the whole thing. So as I'm leaving the garden, Mike Dowling from Channel 5 is there.
I'm the sportscaster. Yes.
So he's interviewing people, and lo and behold, they interview me, and they're like, what do you think of WrestleMania? And I think I called Hulk Hogan Goldilocks or something like that and all that stuff. So I go home, it's Sunday, and my parents are like, well, we're going to go out to dinner for Sunday dinner instead of cooking. I'm like, all right, so we go to the restaurant and everything, and this TV's in the restaurant, and all of a sudden the waitress comes over and says, hey, you enjoyed WrestleMania. We just saw you on TV.
Oh.
And my parents look at me like, where did you go? And I said, I went to see WrestleMania. And the news was still on in the bar area and all that. There's a restaurant called Alfredo's in Quincy. The TV's, and there I am. There's my mug. I got totally blown out of the water. Totally blown out of the water on that one.
That's awesome, man.
Oh, John Wills chiming in. Black Saturday, 1984. Remember that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That Vince McMahon taking over the airwaves there. That was
Freddie Miller. He introduced Vince McMahon. Yeah, I think it was
the World Championship Wrestling set, too. I couldn't believe they did that.
Yeah.
That was weird. That was like a strange. That had been the beginning, obviously, of Ted Turner and Vince McMahon's relationship somewhere. Because after that, it went downhill. Them two went downhill relationship-wise because, obviously, Turner got WCW and all that stuff. So,
yeah,
that is crazy. Just looking at the chat here. Big Farmer tried to jump into the ring with Superstar and Super Destroy, but the police stopped and we wanted to get him into the ring. That's something right there.
There were no rules back then. If a fan came in the ring, whatever happened to him, happened to him.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember Mass Superstar Backlund, right before he lost it, got Arnold Skolin got the neck breaker on the outside the ring floor and chaos.
He also did it to Eddie Gilbert. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right. I remember Eddie Gilbert getting it on the floor too. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, when Mass Superstar gave you that, it was all over.
That was another guy, very underrated man. Was he legit? I mean, he was the real deal.
Great interview too. Yeah.
Here's a guy that I used to love growing up. Still like him too. Greg Valentine.
Love him.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, he was a wrestler. He love him. Obviously a generational wrestler, father, grandfather, all wrestlers. He was but lo and behold, this is the controversial picture here. Here he is with the World Wrestling Federation Championship belt. With that controversy in Madison Square Garden in November, well, the match actually took place in October of 81, where he won the belt. And they said, no, he didn't win the belt. The referee was, they both wore black trunks. So they suspended the belt.
The referee got knocked out by an airplane spin or something.
Dick Kroll, I do believe, was the referee.
No, or John Stanley, I want to say, you might be right.
Yeah, maybe John Stanley. Maybe it was John Stanley. And, I remember reading about it and saying, both guys had black trunks on. So they held the belt up and Valentine wouldn't give the belt back. So when the rematch took place in November of 81, here he comes out into Madison Square Garden. This is probably the only lone picture of him with that title. Obviously, I took it off the TV set there, but he was, to see him win that belt, have that belt. That was shocking. That was like, I'm trying to think of what we can relate to it nowadays, but it was just shocking to see that as a fan. Right. Like, oh my God, he's got Backlund's belt. He's not supposed to have that belt.
Honestly, though, there was there were several guys that if they had won, it would have not surprised me. One of them was Valentine. Yep. One of them was Morocco.
Yeah, Morocco.
And the other one was Ken Patera. If any one of those guys had won, I wouldn't have been shocked.
Yeah.
Adonis, Bob Orton, Cowboy Bob Orton.
Yeah, Adonis, Bob Orton. Yeah, one of those guys.
Here's the power of the internet. Foxhole Willie mentioned that Alfredo's in Quincy. My aunt used to waitress there. Foxhole, who was your aunt? I used to know pretty much all the waitresses there. I grew up there. I'm dying to know if you can answer me that, if you're still listening. Foxhole Willie, Alfredo's in Quincy. My aunt used to waitress there. I want to see that because Alfredo's is closed now. It's long gone because Quincy's Quincy and it's growing and all that stuff, but that is funny. And then Ja Will says, Valentine, I believe him when he says he did not do much gear. Seems to have aged pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. D should never have been blacklisted. Oh, okay. So now we're talking about that. Dr.
Yeah, Adonis was so good. Yes, he was. When the original version of Adonis from Hell's Kitchen with the black leather jacket.
Right.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
And the sleeper hold. It seemed legitimately scary. I worried about Bob Backlund back then getting into that, you know.
I remember when they wouldn't wake up. Some of them wouldn't wake up, or they wouldn't, do the proverbial slap on the back of the neck.
Yeah.
And the referee's like, you got 5 seconds to do it. And it was like, no, I'm not going to do it. It's like,
and the announcer would sell it. There was possible brain damage because there was blood cut off from the brain.
Yeah.
Benny, Beth Hopper's back. She wanted to let you know that.
Welcome back, Playmate.
Lots of Dave Schultz, the hockey player, drag racer, amateur wrestler, all that stuff. Yeah, Dr. D pretty much, hitting John Stossel there wasn't exactly a smart move. But there's rumors or I don't know, some type of opinions out there that saying that whole thing was a work as well. Do you believe that, or the 2020 interview when he smacked John Stossel? And
no,
I don't think so.
I mean, you don't think it was a work? You don't think he was told to do that? Because I think Dr. G said he was supposed to do something to do that. I don't know who told him that, but there's a lot of different stories and opinions on that. But you know,
Vince told him in not so many words. I guess he said, go up there and blast him. Wow. So Dr. D might have interpreted blast.
Literally, right?
He blasted him. All right.
He blasted him. All right.
Yeah.
Faye Spooner, she recently died. That was the aunt that worked there. I think I remember her. Wow. So Belzer and Stossel happened.
Only too. Luke Kenner with Belzer and Stossel.
Yeah, he's saying that was 2 weeks apart, that the John Stossel and the
cinching up Belzer in the front face lock.
That's why I think it's kind of a work. If you get the Belzer thing happening 2 weeks later with the sleeper hold on air.
And, it was,
you know,
it was all about hype, man. Vince, I mean, it was do or die for Vince and for this whole thing. So talk about mainstream attention. You know, those two events were guaranteed to get him.
Right,
all eyes on the product. So,
And I remember that NBC special that they had with Bill Monsoon had what's his name? What's that sports guy?
Dick Ebersol? No,
nope, the ball guy. He used to do the tennis and all that stuff. Oh, it's gonna kill me! But he had him in an airplane spin. Saying I'm a giant.
Bud Collins.
Oh, yeah,
Bud Collins is involved too. The tennis guy. Yeah.
And that's when they got into like wrestling, and that's when the crossover took place. Like, is this real, or what are you doing, and all that stuff.
It might have been worth it for McMahon to pay out $500,000 to Stossel just for the publicity.
Yeah, I agree.
I've
heard stories. I mean, there was a lawsuit too, right? Then there was a lawsuit that Stossel got like $200,000 back then for that, or something like that. Yeah,
he probably did, and I think Belzer got $400,000.
Yeah, that's big money back then. That's big money.
Huge. It bought him a house in the south of France, from what I understand.
Joe Will chimed in. Yeah, Joe Will said it was Bud Collins. Thank you, Joe Will. Thank you. Dr. D slapped him twice. That made it worse. Yeah, it was Loose Cannon just said that. Yeah, he got slapped twice. I forgot that. Hit him once, and that's why I thought it was kind of a work, you know, because he hit him once, and then he hit him again, and I'm like, you know, back then I was shocked. It was all over the news. You know, I mean, it was a big deal. But, you know, looking back on it now and listening to some of the stories, it's like, was it a work? Because Mr. Fuji was right there just sitting there.
Grinning.
Yeah.
Grinning and laughing.
So I'm thinking, is this a work? Like, yeah, like maybe he thought it was a work. He didn't jump in. Because if that happened nowadays, there'd be security. There'd be chaos. Right. There'd be like, you know, it's just crazy how wrestling's evolved now and so forth. But, Loose Cannon says it wasn't a work. Okay.
I think it is a shoot. It was.
No kidding.
It was.
Wow.
You know, it's so funny. We talk about these things, and, you know, we've got people of different ages in the chat and all. And I sometimes just say, I'm just so fortunate to have grown up in the old days, you know?
Absolutely.
They were different, you know?
Yeah. And
they really were, you know?
I wrestling will never mean to these, you know, the fans today, what it meant to us.
Yep.
I'm so grateful to have grown up when I did.
Yeah.
Growing up in New York, you know, part of the WWF, part of Bruno's, both his title reigns.
Yeah. You were there. Yeah.
In the magazine heyday.
Yep.
It was great.
Yep. I grew up Backlund Morales and Tony Greer, Rick Martel were the champions.
Yeah.
You know, it was always like that. Backlund obviously holding the title for so long. Obviously he was the first real champion I saw. I always regret it because I used to collect wrestling magazines, and I'd go back to 79-80, and I just missed some of the good stuff that happened in 79, because I think WWF changed in like 79-80.
Yeah,
it was 79. WWF. You know,
you could back order some of those, Joe, back in the day. Oh, yeah. I ordered some from 74, like one with Andre and Pedro on the cover, you know, and
John Tolos,
perhaps.
That's definitely not.
The Sheik, the Bloody Sheik on the cover. Yeah, those are always winners.
The first magazine I ever got was a Bloody Harley Race on the cover with Tommy Rich. Yeah.
They look like crime scenes, the magazine covers
they
back
did.
Then.
Oh, yeah. And then PWI brought they had the centerfolds every month. You know, I collected them all. Von,
I had them all. Don
Morocco. How bad of a fan of how good of a fan I was for Easter. Easter basket was full of wrestling magazines.
Love it.
You know, my parents knew. They knew I was hooked. They knew I was sucked into that pro wrestling game. And, you know, and to this day, even though I stepped away from it the last couple of years and I'm coming back into it now, it's, you know, I think it's one of those things that I'll always have in front of me that I want to do, that comes natural, that we can all just participate in. Phil, same with you.
You know,
dates, times, whatever.
Yeah. Benny,
you're like Rain Man. You could probably tell us what the weather was like that day and whether or not, you know, there was a red light or green light on the corner or something like that.
But it was a part of us. It really was. And that's never left any of us.
Yep. I hear you. I mean, John Gallagher, he loved Harley Race. Yeah, Harley Race was a great wrestler. You know, of course, I didn't get to see him until he was King Harley Race in the WWF. But looking at the wrestling magazines, he's based out of Kansas City, Missouri. I remember when him and Flair would trade titles. Every time I picked up the wrestling magazine, Flair beat Race or Race beat Flair.
Yeah.
And of course, Dusty Rhodes comes along and it's Rhodes and Flair and all that stuff. So
watch a Gordon Solie Harley Race interview. And it sounds like the seventh game of the World Series. It sounds that legit.
I learned all my wrestling jargon, no doubt about it, from Gordon Solie. Watching him on Georgia, arm drags, sunset flips,
gut wrench salto,
the abdominal stretch. You know, can he get out of it? Can he reach the ropes? Can he hip toss him? You know, it was believable. You know what I mean? It was like, I don't know. I can't describe it. I feel really bad for the generation now that's coming in and seeing the product that's out there that, you know, where they're, you know, you look at Roman Reigns and God, his father was Afa or Sika or whatever. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, Afa and Sika were, the Samoans were something that they were to be reckoned with, especially on Saturday mornings. I mean,
incredible. To me, they're wrestling analysts now. They're not really fans. We were fans. We lived and died with it.
Sure. Yeah, we did. It was good stuff.
And it took 40 years for me to hear Afa or Sika talk for the first time. And I was in awe when I did, you know?
Wow.
Awesome. It's wild. Yeah.
Let me see here. John Gallagher in the Iron Claw. I liked Harley Race actor. He did a good job. I haven't seen the Iron Claw yet. Has anybody seen
it? I heard he did a good job at Flair.
What'd you think, Phil? How was it?
You know, it got me a little emotional at the end. It was, I mean, a good story. Of course, I quibbled with some of the casting. You know, Kerry Von Erich. I don't think that this kid should have played Kerry, you know.
Okay.
He was not that physically imposing. Kevin was well cast. David. Fritz was very well cast. All in all, a good effort, I think. Okay. You know?
They're going to win any awards next year?
it very well could. But again, maybe not for wrestling fans. I think for a larger audience would find it a little more appealing.
Sure.
You know, we'll always look at it with such a critical eye and, you know, kind of pick it apart. But you know what? It was a good story. Again, it evoked emotion in me, and that's what you want, you know?
That's the bottom line, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Will says, Eddie Graham told Gordon to call it, it was a legitimate sport. That's right. That's right. Good stuff in the chat here. Okay, folks, I think we're going to wrap this up. We've been on the air for a while.
Wait a minute. Right? I thought we had some breaking news
here. Oh, we do got breaking news here, folks. Breaking news.
We're trumping the dirt sheets here. Everybody that sees this, just remember where you saw this.
Yeah,
you saw it on Wrestling. Remember, you didn't see it on Wrestling Observer or Wrestling Insider. You saw it here.
Let me see. There it is. Breaking news. Boom. Oh boy. Oh boy.
There she is.
There it is. Benny Scala, the player. Breaking news. She uncovered this today. Aunt Esther
Holy shit. All
elite. Sucker.
Aunt Esther. Holy. Who the hell needs Mercedes Moné if they have Aunt Esther?
Aunt Esther. I could see her going up against Timeless Toni Storm. Now, that would be something.
But who would be her manager?
I don't know. Yeah, who would be?
That's a good question.
Would Ric Flair be her manager? He's got
Ric Flair. I don't know. Who would be a good manager for her?
Maybe somebody from the cast of Sanford and Son. Maybe
Lamont.
Grady from Sanford and Son.
Grady, absolutely Grady.
No Lamont, though, because they didn't get along.
So. No. Well, no, Fred and she didn't. Lamont was the favorite nephew.
Fred.
Wow. Esther is all elite. I can't
Esther
was
Tony Khan's sister, right?
Tony Khan strikes again. Tony Khan's doing it all, man. I'm telling you.
Well, I mean, I don't know if he's paying Aunt Esther the same money he was going to pay Mercedes Moné, but I mean, that's a bargain.
I don't know, guys.
She's got a loaded purse, though, man. She wields that with great authority. So,
John Gallagher, you big dummy. He loved Red Fox. You big dummy. Remember that?
Love that show.
I remember he said to Esther, stick your face in dough and make gorilla cookies.
Yep.
John Wills chiming in again. LaVonda Page was a stripper as a young woman.
I never knew that.
Wow. You learn everything right now, I'm telling you.
Wow.
And anybody that saw her never
Whitman Mayo.
Bruce Cannon says Tony Storm is owning
Whitman right now. Man, J.A. Will, holy crap. That's some good trivia there. Whitman Mayo.
Wow. Yeah, Gerard Mayer, yeah. Oh, Whitman Mayo. Great. Oh, yeah.
No relation to the new Patriots coach.
Yeah, Gerard Mayo. You knew that was coming.
Maybe there is a relation. I don't know.
Who knows?
But apparently, J.A.
I don't think she liked any of Fred's friends either, though. Did she? She liked Lamont. That was it.
Yeah, something like that.
DeMond Wilson, right?
Yeah, DeMond Wilson. He's a preacher now.
Is he still around?
Yes, he's still alive. Yeah.
John Gallagher. John Gallagher over Mercedes Moné. Yeah,
absolutely. Every day and twice on Sunday.
Yep, there you go. But, she's going to stick your face into some dough and make some gorilla cookies.
Yep. Gorilla cookies, yep.
Baby cakes, at it again, I'm telling you. But real quick, Timeless Toni Storm, what are your thoughts on her? Real quick, you think this is gold? I think it's gold. I think Tony Khan should do something.
Fantastic. I think she's fantastic.
It's must-see TV.
I think it's really cool.
I think so, too. I think this can go a long way. I think this can help Tony Khan turn the corner, so to speak, if you can just concentrate on that. I honestly believe that the women's division in AEW is almost – it's getting there. Going to be very comparable. I'm not going to say to WWE. I'm going to say comparable to NXT because NXT's got some strong women going on right now, but I think that Timeless Toni Storm is gold. I think they should really, really put this as the main focus right now while they figure out what they're going to do with the guys. Because right now, I think that whole locker room, that whole producing and storyline is a mess. There's no real stories. There's no real stories with the guys right now. Then you get Timeless Toni Storm, who can make a story just by an interview. The Black and White, the Butler, you know, Mariah May and all that stuff. I think it's gold. I'll be honest with you. That's why I only watch AEW now. I just see Timeless Toni Storm.
Speaking of gold, I think we talked about this yesterday a bit, but I think Jinder Mahal was like solid gold the last couple of weeks.
Oh, he's going to be great. He's got the title match tonight, right? On Raw this Monday, I think it is. Is that what's happening?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. He might.
I only say that because Hook.
Isn't that what prompted Tony Khan's tweet?
Yeah.
Not that stuff.
Yep. And if I mentioned this on the 30 on Wednesday night. Hook, who's pretty much, you know, besides Taz's son, walked up to Samoa Joe and says, I want a title match. And they gave him a titles match. So that's a title match next week. Samoa Joe versus Hook. And I think that was a slap in the face to the Jinder Mahal thing. Because they're saying, you know, AEW saying Jinder Mahal's a has been around. All of a sudden, he gets a title shot. So now you got Hook, who's pretty much doing nothing with the FTW Championship. It, you know, it's a mismatch. But I think that was Tony Khan's slap back to
Could
WWE.
Be, yeah,
I honestly think so because again, no storyline. Just like the Jinder Mahal thing. I mean, the Jinder Mahal thing has a little bit of a storyline, but to get a title shot, on Monday is kind of crazy. But
and you know, a quick nod to R-Truth too, whom I love and always have.
He's like 55 years old now.
He's fantastic.
He's ageless.
He'll save the Judgment Day. Because a faction like that can go stale pretty quick.
He's kind of reviving it a bit,
especially with the other kid there. What's his name?
JD
McDonough. Yeah.
So he's kind of reviving it. So because you know factions like that, you know, unless you have something going on, you know, that's what it is. But leading up to the Rumble, there could be some tension there because if they all enter the Rumble together, you know, I could see Dominic and Damian going at it or something like that. But who knows? Yeah. You know, all right, folks, I think we're going to wrap this up. We've been chatting for over an hour, right?
I reckon.
This has been a lot of fun, though.
I do want to thank everybody who joined us on the chat tonight. Very lively chat. Joe Will, Loose Cannon, Beth Hopper. I think Katie Morgan was in there a little earlier.
The playmate.
Yeah, the playmate. Beth Hopper is saying, hurry home, playa. Uh-oh.
I'm on my way.
It's Friday night.
I'm coming.
Friday
That's what she
night.
Said.
You just got paid, right? You just got paid, Benny, Friday night.
Oh, yeah. You know what rhymes with paid, right?
Yeah, we know. Yep. Raid. Kincaid. There you go. All right, folks, we're going to wrap this up. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Bonnie and the Pharaoh. I want to thank Bruce for allowing me to come in this week. Bruce is on assignment. He'll be back next week, hopefully. We've got to go. But I want to thank all the viewers out there. I want to thank Bonnie and the Pharaoh, everybody in the chat, all the good stuff. Phil, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, man. Love it, Joe.
The player, thank you as well for tuning in and all that stuff. And
We're working on
true crime, right? We're working on true crime, Whitey Bulger.
Hopefully a week from Monday, we're going to do the long-awaited Whitey Bulger episode. And keep watching the Monty and the Pharaoh YouTube channel for some updates on that. But that's going to be a must-see, can't miss. That's going to be a great show.
I think Monty's got some good guests coming up in the following week. So you got to tune into that Wednesday night. I'm What a Day in Centerville, if anybody wants to tune into that. But Thursday, the 30, 8 o'clock Eastern time, 7 o'clock Central. I'm trying to regain the title behind me, the 30 championship.
We got to check Bruce's bank account. I think there might be some finagling going on.
I want to know, what do you got for a shirt there? Oh, Monty the Pharaoh. Look at that.
I want everyone to have a good night's sleep like Sleepy Guy right here. We remember Sleepy Guy.
Hey, that rhymes. Monty and the Pharaoh apparel.
There you go.
Nice alliteration there.
Good stuff.
And we'll be back next Friday night, 8 o'clock Eastern time. If all goes well, we'll be live again. And, do us a favor, folks. Share this. Share the video. Join Monty and the Pharaoh.
Tell your friends. Drive.
Like, share, comment, all that good stuff, you know?
This is how Turn it on at the bowling alley.
Yeah, there you go. All right, folks. You guys take care. We're out of here.
Love, peace, chicken grease.
I'm What a Day, Joe. What a day.